What's up, goons? We are back with another episode of Notes of a Goon. I'm your host, Chris Vega, joined, as always, by my stalwart producer, Michael Harrington. How are you, Mike?
Stalwart as ever, Chris.
Now, we're here. We're doing a very brief thing up top. We're in a bit of a time crunch, but don't worry. This will be a full-length episode. I recorded a podcast driving from Kansas City to Omaha, Nebraska, with Robbie Bernstein a couple weeks back. And we're just going to have that tacked on to the end of this program. You cool with that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's great because, like, there was that one week, I think, that we missed, and everybody was like, oh, Harrington, you suck at your job. You stink. You should go die in a fire. We're telling Bisping, you know, because you have incentivized the culture of dry snitching. But in reality...
What do you mean? I incentivized the culture of proper snitching.
Proper snitching.
Because here's the thing, Mike. Somebody has to check on you.
So stop snitching went out the window, like, at the same time.
Just for this one instance, snitching is okay.
Yellow, the canary square earrings went out of style around the same time as stop snitching.
Snitching is not acceptable in any other...
I'm the only one it's okay for?
Well, no, not even for everything. Just for this one thing.
Okay. All right.
I think that's fair. This show needs to reach its audience.
And it does.
Sometimes late.
Unless you are on the road and don't send me an episode, and then I can't get it out.
Well,
so that's
it needed some audio engineering. Luckily, I know a very fat audio engineer who happens to co-host a different show with me.
Oh, okay. I'm a pretty fat audio engineer.
That is true. But a fatter audio engineer more experience.
Oh, yeah. Way more.
Yes.
Like, you know, actually good at it.
Well, I mean, he does... You know, look, I don't want to talk about how much he makes. I know I used to blab about you making $250,000 a year as a comedy club booker.
He's going to make at least $2 million.
Three or four, man.
Right.
He's always saying he's broke, but that's because of all the shit he puts up his nose. And then he's got to eat so much to maintain that weight. It's
right.
Fucking crazy.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Need every dollar of that.
Yeah. But yeah, so he worked some audio magic on this because it was a little fucked up in the car, but it is airable, so we're going to air that. At the end of this, but I figure we should do some fresh content and air some things. So, Mike, what did you want to talk about today?
What do I ever want to talk about, Chris?
I don't know. Trans people?
Oh, I mean, that's about what I got for the show today.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
No.
Okay. Wait, there was one other thing, wasn't there?
Yes.
What was I missing?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, I got this one. I got this story pulled up, so that's what we're going with.
Well, we'll start with that.
So a veteran New York City cop, he got kicked off of the NYPD for making nasty 311 calls about his boss.
Okay.
So he would call up and be like, yo, I don't like this sergeant on, this precinct. Kind of tranny looking.
Okay.
This other call. I came to the precinct the other day, and this female in a white shirt who looked like a tranny with fillers was giving me attitude about my property.
So you're saying a cop... They found out a cop was making these...
Was making those phone calls.
How did they find that out?
I don't know. So another one said, I feel bad for the cops. I got to deal with her nasty attitude. Get rid of that bitch.
Well... Look, solid. I don't think you should get fired for this at all. There's not, like, really a proper way to complain about your police sergeant, right?
There isn't.
He was clearly doing an impression of a black person? Is that why he got fired?
I don't know.
Or is it because he kept calling his boss a tranny?
I mean, hold on. There's another one on January 19th, described Hernandez as a man lady who was extremely rude and followed up with a second 311 complaint about a crazy guy dressed as a cop. I mean, dude, I usually don't think the police are very funny.
Well, most of them aren't. This guy, hilarious.
This guy should, honestly, his talents are being wasted.
Yes, 100%.
Like... If you have this in
put out a Jerky Boys album.
Of you calling 311.
Of you calling 311 to call one lady a tranny.
Because at that point, you're just a citizen.
Well, yeah, he's been fired, right?
He's been fired.
By the way, I don't know that you should get fired for this. Because 311 is not 911. I imagine 311 gets plenty of prank phone calls.
So you know what it might be, actually?
Uh-huh.
They might not have been able to fire him for that. But
use of the word tranny.
No, he was, so what I think they actually got him for was he was tapping into the NYPD database 500 times to check up on his ex-girlfriends.
Well, okay, then that's the reason he got fired.
That's probably, here's what probably happened. He kept calling in about this tranny sergeant.
Uh-huh.
And then this, like the sergeant
was. Now, was she his ex?
No.
What does that make you, dog?
She was just his boss.
Okay.
But I'm saying she must have heard these 311 complaints.
Uh-huh.
And just, I'm sure she hears locker room talk and is like, which one of these guys actively calls me a tranny?
I'm sure. Look, there's no way he's the only one calling her a tranny.
Probably in the work. Because here's the thing. If you're calling 311 to make these anonymous complaints, you're playing it fast and loose with that word in the office. Other guys probably say it at the barbecue.
I bet he's calling other people trannies. You know what I mean?
True.
Throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Like, you hear about McGillicuddy got caught fucking a tranny prostitute. He's just throwing tranny around all the time, despite the fact that it's frowned upon nowadays.
Baharim went on to admit that he conducted queries on ex-girlfriends' cars and checked arrest histories of romantic partners several times. He ran license plates of family and friends to check for outstanding summons or to see if their driving privileges were suspended. He was just trying to fuck over her family once she broke up with him.
I mean,
if you were a cop?
But wait, hold on. He was looking up to see if a person committed a crime and they could prosecute them.
Okay, but why are you, as a cop, you're not supposed to be running a license plate unless you see that license plate go by and there's something that sets off your fucking Sherlock Holmes detectors.
Or you know something about this person to let you know that they might be up to no good.
Oh, she's a lying ass bitch. So I bet her whole family's.
Yeah. This fucking lying whore and her shitty lying whore father. And her shitty lying whore nephews.
Okay.
They all look like trannies.
So here's where he fucked up. At the department trial, he claimed the 311 calls were a joke.
Okay.
He said it was a joke because
I think it's pretty funny.
I do too.
Yeah.
He said it was a joke because he felt Hernandez. I mean, the woman's name is Hernandez.
Oh, I thought you were quoting him saying Hernandez.
No, dude. I thought so, too. This is, by the way,
it's funny because you're just reading it as Hernandez, but it looks like Hermandez, which could just be a man's name.
True. Was ridiculing him behind his back, including allegedly poking fun at a skin condition he suffered from. So she was like, you catch a lizard man over there? He's like, fuck you, tranny bitch.
Yeah.
He said his repeat.
You can't be making fun of a man's psoriasis. Maybe he's got nipple chafe from the Kevlar vest.
Maybe.
You've got to wear a wife beater one day.
Who knows? He said his repeated use of the department computers was to help family and friends and said it was part of his Guyanese culture to help those close to him.
You know, we fuck with Guyanese people now.
We kind of do. Guyana's the new wave.
Yeah.
But, I mean, him being like, yeah, I was just checking up on my ex-girlfriend's cousins, you know, see if his license was suspended because I wanted to help that family out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good idea.
Yeah, they didn't believe it. They fired him. 14 years on the force, so he was like 2/3 of the way to his pension. Kind of fucked that one up.
He probably got a half pension.
Or you think?
I think maybe 15 years is a half pension.
Maybe. Plus, you could fucking, you know, you could file some kind of racial suit being like, yo, I'm Guyanese. It's part of our culture.
Yeah, she was
making fun of my skin condition.
She's calling me a tranny because my name is Hernandez.
No. Her name is Hernandez. The person that this cop was calling a tranny
Is Hernandez.
Is Hernandez, which is why it's hysterical.
What's his name?
His name was something really Guyanish.
Guyanish also sounds like a way to describe a trans person.
True. R.M. Baharim. Ram's going to bring it up. You can try to pronounce it because you're more cultured than I am.
Aram Bayram is my take on that name.
Kamaram Bayram.
Ram Bayram.
Yeah,
it sounds like a chemical you're not supposed to mix with certain things in a chem lab.
Yeah. It sounds like something. It sounds like something some mixologist is trying to figure out a way to get into a cocktail safely.
Yeah. you can only rinse. You do a rum by rum rinse.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you add your gin.
Right. It's like lead crystal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, fuck that guy. Moving on. And then our friend John Hinckley's got some stuff going on.
Yes, that was it. Yes. There we go. John Hinckley.
He's going to be in New York.
Well, first he's going to be in Memphis, Tennessee in August.
Nice.
He booked that venue.
Well, I'm sure that'll get
likely. He's going to be with TGP, Ben Mages, and Vincent Menard. So it's like maybe we go through those guys.
Okay.
To get to Hinckley. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like those are his opening acts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's reach out to those guys. We'll offer them some free publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get the Hink in here.
So people were asking if Jody will be attending. Some people said, hell yeah, from Iraq. a bunch of different stuff. And then one, I guess, Gen Z dude said, bruh, are you the guy who tried to delete the president?
Jesus Christ.
Love him. So yeah, Hinckley, he has a gig.
All right.
As you said, likely to get shut down.
I also just want to point out, like, we were kind of on top of talking about Hinckley. Like, me and Zach were talking about John Hinckley, like, 2 years ago. And now he's, like, starting to pop up. He was quoted as saying the way people are acting about Sydney Sweetie was intense. That was the new one this week.
Yeah, he said he didn't get it.
I'll be honest. She's no Jodie Foster.
True.
I mean, Jodie Foster's like almost like a stoic-looking woman. You know what I mean? Like, she'll stare holes through you. Sydney Sweeney is just like, all right, yeah, again, she's like a hoe.
Pretty hot.
She kind of looks like a good girl sometimes.
She's pretty hot.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're taking prime Jodie Foster over...
No. I just understand why you would maybe kill a president over prime Jodie Foster. I don't think I'm killing a president over Sydney Sweeney.
Huh. All right.
I could see why a deranged person or somebody having a break from reality would kill a president over Jodie Foster, but not Sydney Sweeney. Right? Sydney Sweeney is the type of person who, like, everybody likes Sydney Sweeney. Jodie Foster is a striking look that you're like, huh. Also, I wonder if he's watching the new True Detective.
Hinckley?
Yeah, he's got to be.
You think?
Maybe he's trying to avoid it as a trigger.
Yeah, yeah.
He's trying to avoid other triggers.
Yeah. Once she came out as Les, though, he can probably watch it and be like, yeah, obviously I can never be with her.
I don't know. If you're willing to shoot a president for a bitch, you just assume you can be with her.
You think you can? You think that killing a president confidence trumps flipping a lesbian confidence?
I think they're similar levels of confidence, okay. I would say. Like,
interesting.
Yeah. If you're confident you could kill a president.
I don't know if he was confident he could kill him. He was confident he could get her attention.
Okay. He was confident. I think he was confident he could hit him.
Dude, who knows? Maybe. And I'm giving him Hinckley the benefit of the doubt because I would. It'd be an honor and a privilege to have him on the program.
Oh, yeah. I would love to have him on here.
So I do want to choose my words carefully because this could be a future friend of the show.
I consider him a friend now.
There's a chance when he took that shot, he was like, I mean, my name's going to be everywhere, whether he lives or dies. Do I really want to be the guy who killed the president? It's like, or is it cooler to be the guy who's like, yo, you see how into you I am, Jodie Foster? Fucking president's got some new stitches he didn't have before.
It's pretty cool to be the only person to ever walk the streets again who shot a president. I mean, John Wilkes Booth got away.
For like... couple of hours.
Well, there's also the theory that he survived.
What do you mean?
That, like, he killed a guy and then lit a barn on fire. And didn't they find his body in, like, a burned-down barn?
Did they?
Yeah. There is, like, a theory that he escaped, and that was just some other guy he killed in the barn.
Did not go to jail. When troops from New York Cavalry located in a barn in Northern Virginia during the early morning, they set the structure on fire to force Booth to exit. When he did, he was shot. He died later that day.
Okay.
Now, they got the right man.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was a woman who shot at Gerald Ford, but she didn't hit him.
Okay. Well, did she cripple a Secret Serviceman?
I don't remember.
Advantage Hinckley.
Yeah.
She shot at Gerald Ford. Is she out?
Yeah, she did a few years.
Nice.
So this was, I don't know if you heard this story. This was like one of the cooler radio labs I ever heard. It was like, it was just some dude who would like clean the, he was like the swamper, right? Like the overnight bar cleaner for like four or five gay bars in San Francisco.
Okay.
And he was just like a.
Jesus Christ, that's got to be a hell of a job.
Dude. And he was like the kind of person to do it. Like PTSD, vet, fucking gay dude, closeted, living in San Francisco in anonymity. Like just
it's like the squeegee guy at a fucking jerk booth.
Exactly, bro. He was literally would just drink himself into oblivion and then he would like show up in a blackout and just clean up jizz, right? So because his job ends at like 10 a.m., that he just happened to be out walking home. And as he was walking home, he saw a large group of people crowded around like something. And all of a sudden, the fucking president comes out, start giving a speech. He's like, oh, cool. I'm going to check this out. And then right over his right shoulder, some lady pulls out a gun, like takes the shot. She gets one off. I think he like knocked the gun up so that it didn't hit Gerald Ford.
Okay.
But either way, he like tackled her and fucking like got her down, got the gun out of her hand.
Fucking jizzmopper saving the president.
Jizzmopper saving the president. But here's where it becomes a problem. So his name gets put everywhere in the paper like, oh, my God, this guy saved the president's life. What a hero. The LA Times starts digging on him and they're like, oh, turns out this guy's a fag. And it went from like his dad went into the auto plant in Michigan.
Wait a second. They outed him?
They outed him.
He saved the president.
Yes. And they outed him.
So you know what? There's this funny thing. It's like we always talk about there used to be journalistic integrity in this country. That is something that gets bounced about. But apparently it was only for presidents and Rock Hudson.
I don't know about that, though, because they broke the George Hart thing. That was in the 80s.
Well, nobody knew that fucking FDR didn't have legs.
Yeah, but we were also trying to win a war. We were playing an actual propaganda battle against the Third Reich. You can't. You know what I mean? You get a pass for that one.
I guess. Hold on. Wait a second. He wasn't the president. He was the president at the start of the war.
Yeah. He didn't lose his leg. Like, he got the polio.
He couldn't walk when he fucking started.
No. He could walk. I'm going to look when FDR, because he had polio as a kid, but it, like, didn't relapse and fuck his legs up until later in life.
Ah, I see.
When did FDR lose the ability to walk? Because in, like, later 32nd president, experienced symptoms of paralytic illness in 1921 when he was 39 years old.
Yeah, there you go, 1921.
Huh. Yeah, I'm trying to figure, but I remember there was like a thing where he like, there was like some movie about the atom bomb where like he did like actually stand up out of the wheelchair for
I'm
like,
sure he could get up a little bit.
Appearances and stuff. Yeah.
You know, as Bronx Johnny would say, he could use some sticks.
Sure. But I don't think we've ever really had journalistic integrity. And this was like, this is what I mean.
Yeah. If you're just out a guy for being gay.
Well, they were like telling the story of his life, and they were like, "Oh, how great is it that this like out gay or this gay man in San Francisco saved a president's life?" And they were like, in their mind, they were like, "Oh, we're doing the right thing. We're trying to show that."
Turns out he also shot Harvey Milk.
Yeah, he had a complicated life. He was actually boys with Harvey Milk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This guy's life is pretty fucking interesting. But I'm pretty sure he killed himself. At the end of all of this.
Or it could have been that lady he stopped from killing Ford.
You think she came back for him?
Yeah.
I don't think, I'm pretty sure.
Jason Voorhees situation.
I think she was in jail when he died. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he didn't kill himself. But it ruined his life. Like, saving the president's life ruined the life of a guy whose life before being ruined?
Well, to be fair, it also ruined the guy who saved Reagan's life.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, he took
him. He was in a wheelchair for the rest of his life.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, that's the Brady Bill is named after. The guy's name was Brady. And he was paralyzed by getting shot by Hinckley.
So what's the Brady Bill do? Like, you gotta have.
It was a gun control. It was a federal gun control bill.
I thought it was gonna be you have to have fucking bulletproof vests for the Secret Service.
Yeah, they used to not get them because it looked bulky in the suits, and people didn't want head of state to be standing around with fat guys.
For real?
Yeah, that's
Oh, okay. 100% hook, line, and sinker. You had me.
Well, I would have been telling people that for the rest of my life. After
Kennedy, if any. I don't even know when the Secret
Why?
Service
Kennedy
started.
Got shot in the head. What was the Secret Service going to do?
Yeah, it's true. Fucking.
Vest ain't doing
and now
shit
because
there.
Of him, no president could ever have a convertible again.
Sucks.
How much would Joe Biden love to have a Corvette?
He does
he's
have.
Got, he's got Cor. Yeah, but like, he can't let the top down.
Can't be doing that. No, I mean, he did. He did that photo shoot for Vanity Fair. Remember when he was cool, hip, young Joe with a convertible?
Yeah.
Bro, did you, I think I sent you this video earlier. Just, it's on the subject of old Sleepy Joe. This was somebody describing.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this.
The Yukon,
It's also crazy that this isn't a bigger story.
Yeah, right? This was from, so this is.
By the way, he's probably going to get called the Nazi in like an hour, this kid.
Yeah. How could you not? So UConn just went back to back, winning the, college basketball, national championship.
Okay.
And, this went viral. One of the players talking about their experience visiting the White House
last year.
Okay.
You had to click over.
Yeah, I got you.
Went to the White House, took a picture with Joe Biden, team picture. Joe Biden talked to us for about 3 minutes. Okay. And then right after that, he asked us for a picture again.
Hmm. What did he say in that 3 minutes?
Yeah. Completely ignored Coach Hurley. Really couldn't understand what he was saying. And then he said, all right, let's grab a picture.
Do you think he knows basketball?
Not much. Last year, after not, winning
that. I mean, the most damning part of that is not much, right? At the end there?
Yeah, dude, that guy
even
knows
Trump can at least fake knowing about sports.
I think Trump could, he genuinely does know a little, he knows enough about the UFC.
He knows enough to get by. Like, when I was listening to him and Jorge do that commentary, what it was one of those Triller fights. When they did the, when he jumped on into the
booth. Oh, right. Yeah.
And he talks like a guy who knows he has to talk about fights sometimes, but knows absolutely nothing about the sport, really. Like, he knows because he owns casinos, he has to meet boxers.
You don't think Trump's watching the prelims for every UFC?
No, he's not watching. He doesn't have a ladder going at all. He's not doing any of this. I mean, I don't watch the prelims for UFC anymore. It's been years. There's too much content.
I mean, there was two former champions in the first fight of the night.
I understand. It was, what is UFC 300? I mean, come on.
Oh, man. How great was that?
I didn't watch it. I'll be honest.
Are you serious?
I didn't watch the no spoilers. I have avoided spoilers for 2 days.
You literally don't know what happened?
No. No clue.
Are you serious?
Yes. Don't tell me. I'm going to watch it when I get home. I was going to watch it last night, but there's a thing that happened I can't talk about.
I'm beyond, like, flabbergasted is not the... How have you avoided these spoilers for... I could not possibly...
I just didn't click the little magnifying glass in Twitter. And I waited...
Okay, look, I'm not going to say another word then.
Yeah. You also probably follow a lot more fucking karate friends than me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
Moving on. All right, one more thing and then we'll talk about our friends. But, you know, there's a lot of negative comments about migrants in New York City lately. But they're not all bad. I'm going to say this. We got to look at some of the... I'll tell you this. You can't go to the New York Post's metro section. The entire thing is about migrants. And they're all trying to paint them in negative lights. But sometimes they accidentally let you know that these migrants are pretty cool. Because I saw a story. One of them stole a fire department boat.
Yeah, this 22-year-old badass from Ecuador.
Okay.
Homeless man, Juan Hernandez, he took a historic fireboat on a wild journey down the Hudson River.
Fantastic.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, he's Steamboat Wilfredo. This is what I'm saying is, like, that's just whimsy at this point. Can we just admit they're people too?
Taking that boat.
He didn't crash it.
Kinda. He got stuck.
Is the boat still operable?
I don't know.
Then he's fine. There was an autistic guy.
He got stuck and then hopped onto a sailboat. Dude, he went GTA rules on the water.
Oh, dude.
Crashed his first boat, jumped another boat.
GTB?
GTB, dude.
What? Oh, man, he looks like his last name is San Andreas.
Wilfredo's Andreas?
Yeah. No, but like it's like, come on. There was a guy back in the day that got arrested a few times for stealing trains on the MTA, and then they ran on time. It's like, just give this guy a job. Make this guy fucking put him in charge of the Staten Island Ferry.
What? Him and Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Be great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, let's talk about our friends over at Zia Extraordinary Farms.
Ooh.
Zia Extraordinary Farms, they create topical salves out of high CBD, high CBG hemp. And it's really good for your muscles and when you're feeling sore. I love it when I get a good pump and then you're sore the next day. You rub a little of that in. Helps you get back to working out sooner. Mike, you use this for when you're running, right? On your knees.
Every single time. And my lower back, honestly.
All right. I didn't need to picture your lower back, I'll be honest.
This is hairy.
Yeah, I assume. I imagine it bridges out weirdly. But that's not the fault of Zia Extraordinary Farms.
Tell you everybody now, it may bridge out a little bit. Zia Extraordinary Farms covers it all.
That's true. It really gets in there. Even through the hair, he's still getting muscle relaxation thanks to Zia Extraordinary Farms. So what I need you to do is go to ZefHemp, ZefHemp.com. Use the promo code Goon25 for 25% off your order. That's ZefHemp.com. Promo code Goon25 for 25% off your order. And here we go. We got another show coming up for you. Myself and Robbie Bernstein were out at the Zia Extraordinary Farms last year in Los Lunas, New Mexico. But I'm going to say moving on, and this will be a car ride from the road. Moving on. Well, this is Notes from the Road. It's myself, Chris Vega, Robbie Bernstein in the car. What's going on, Rob?
What's up, Goon Boys? I just had the best breakfast of my life.
Oh my God, it was crazy. What was that place called? Corner Cafe?
Corner Cafe. I would move to Kansas just to eat at that place every day of my life, grow old and get fat.
I was saying to Rob, we could have, if we just stole their entire menu, put it in New York, and spent $10,000 on a PR person, we would be making $1 million a year.
I'd also be dead of a heart attack in 3 months.
Probably. We ate a cinnamon roll. I wanted to go back. I slept 10 hours last night. I wanted to go back to sleep right after this. But I wanted to record something just in case I don't get a chance to record an episode of Notes of the Goon this week. I'm going to still probably try to do one on Monday. But we're out here on the drive from Kansas City to Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, and if you're hearing Roaring Engine, I got the fucking premium. Listen to that shit, dudes.
Yeah, we're driving around in a Mustang. Guys from New York in middle America driving around in too fast of a car. You're not asking for trouble at all.
No, I feel good about this ride. Haven't got pulled over yet.
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
Really throwing the jinx out there.
Right there.
I bet it's all war people. Civil War people at that.
Maybe.
Buried with their musket.
So yeah, we're out here. It's Notes of a Goon. I got Rob Bernstein here, so I figure this is probably a little politics heavy. So this is a weird question that I want to ask you, and I kind of realized it recently. It's a realization that comes on slowly. When you were growing up, you're in Stamford, Connecticut, right? So it's like, were most of the people that you grew up around some level of liberal?
Yeah, I feel like it used to be old school Democrats, which were, they called them like the New York Democrats or even Jew Democrats,
like
which were
Clinton Democrats.
Yeah, the fiscally conservative but socially liberal Democrats. I think Obama, when he was maybe not the most favorable to Israel or to the Jewish community,
uh-huh.
I feel like that's when, because all of those people hated Bush, but then the Democratic Party changed a little bit when Obama came around, where I think people kind of almost started to get lost between the two parties because they didn't really identify with the almost extreme liberalism of the modern day Democrats.
Well, that's the thing though, is Obama wasn't an extreme liberal. He was just a black guy.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Maybe that's what, maybe everyone I'm describing actually was just secretly racist and said, well, not if we're going to put up a black guy, but that's not the way it seemed.
No, I think Obama became president and the grassroots of that party became heavily progressive. Despite the
right.
fact that he wasn't doing very progressive things other than Obamacare, which you can argue was just a fucking profit scheme for the insurance companies, really.
Yeah, isn't it amazing with the look back of just how much more I don't even know the figures on this, but how much more profitable insurance companies have been since Obamacare.
You know what's an interesting thing that nobody talks about when it comes to
Trump got rid of the mandate for Obamacare, right?
Right.
So what nobody ever talks about is people said that was going to kill Obamacare, but actually registrations on the, like they said within a year, this thing will be dead. We're going to see registrations screech to a halt. And it actually went up that year because just talking about it a lot made people go, oh, I've been meaning to do that.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's so much
fun. Place looks cool. The Dusty Trail Cafe and Steakhouse.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a bunch of truckers in there jerking off onto a steak.
Ooh, that might be a good steak. Yeah, trucker cum sitting in there. It's spicy, I bet.
Biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, that would blend in.
Yeah.
I just wish that they would bring back catastrophic care plans. I only had one of those. It was great. It was like $100 every 6 months or something crazy like that.
And it's like if you get hit by a bus.
It's like the extreme stuff. And then the best is if you get yourself a concierge doctor, so that you actually, because the way it currently is, my experience with the healthcare system is, firstly, I have one of my biggest expenses. I mean, I basically pay for my healthcare what I pay in rent. I think my insurance policy, which is the worst or the highest deductible plan you can get in Connecticut, bronze care coverage, as a single individual with high enough income that I don't have any tax credits, I believe is about $6 or $6.50 a month. Maybe it's $5.50. It's somewhere in that range. And we're talking, I don't have a single pre-existing condition. I'm 35 years old.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
Jewish.
Short and Jewish is okay.
Yeah, they look at your balding and they're like, we know you have stomach problems too. Don't lie to us.
You're some sort of intolerant.
Yeah.
Not just racially.
Yeah, exactly. I've not seen a doctor in years. I find my experience with doctors is if you have a problem that you're looking for a solution to, they refer you to somewhere else. You to someone else. It's 3 months later. No one has a solution other than basically wait and see. And now you've got 10 medical bills that you thought you had paid, you thought was covered. And all of a sudden you're getting dinged on your credit score.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it is kind of this thing where it's like, I'm so fed up with doctors. Because every time you go to, again, like you said, I go to my general care practitioner once a year. Then they just go, I go, yeah, I'm having this issue. And they go, all right, well, we need to do this. Then you go to this guy, and then he goes, we're going to have to run like 8 tests. And
right.
I'm like, what are you guys doing? Are you getting it feels like they're getting a commission.
I think, well, a lot of it is that, I don't know if it's commissions, but I've definitely seen where you see a doctor and they have some of that testing equipment in-house.
Oh, yeah.
So whatever the fuck they can run, they're going to run. You basically just walked in and said, hey, can you bill me some money? And then I've also found in my experience, I think one of the biggest scams of insurance is it seems to me, and I've not done my homework on this. There's things that I've researched and I really know about, so I'm just kind of shooting from the hip. But it seems to me like the copay that you pay is what the cost would be if you didn't have insurance. So it's like the scam of insurance is they almost worked with the offices to make the cost that they'll send you a bill for to, let's say, be 70%, like the 30% of that bill is just what it costs. So it looks like the insurance company almost doesn't have to send them anything. You just pay the copay, and that's what the billing office was supposed to get.
Well, people always talk about like market forces, and the fact of the matter is like, since people can't afford this, if you just got rid of things like insurance and like the ability to put this on a credit card,
it would all come down in cost. Yes,
it would have to.
Yeah. Well, the best example, and I don't know to a goon that often, so I don't know how heady you get on these things. But I recommend going to read this piece. I read it. It goes back to when Hillary Clinton was trying to get healthcare in the 90s. This guy George Reisman wrote this piece on why healthcare drives up costs. And the second I say it, you'll go, this makes sense. Imagine you sat down in a restaurant with 25 friends and you're splitting the bill at the end of it. And you have no control over what anyone else is doing. So you get the biggest thing off the menu because you're not gonna sit there and just order soup to have to pay for someone else's steak. So that's kind of what happens with insurance, is because nothing's out of pocket. We're all trying to get the best care at all times. And we're never making like the economic choices of what do I actually need here.
Well, it's also, but it's this thing, it's like the people with the most free time who tend to be the most affluent are the people, it's like we've talked about on this show, where like long COVID and chronic fatigue syndrome have the same through line, in that the people who have them the most are upper middle class white women who are stay at home.
They just don't know they're depressed.
Well, they don't know that they are depressed and sad, and also, they have a lot of time to sit on the couch and go, I don't feel well.
Right, right. Well, and then just focus on the problem, whereas if they had to show up to an office, they might just click out of it because you don't have a choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, for example, I just went to an eye doctor. I've had a problem with my left eye since before COVID started.
Right.
Where I'm getting a lot of floaters, inflammation, but I just, like, I don't want to go to my doctor to then make an appointment to then go to this place to then have them tell me I need an MRI. Because I'm like, that's 4 days. I don't
right.
have 4 days.
Right.
Like, that's 4 full days. Like, even when I was going to the dentist to fix my teeth, they'd be like, oh, how come you haven't been here in a while? I'm like, it's an entire day.
Right.
Like, when every time, forget the fact that it's expensive. It's an entire fucking day.
When you get floaters, do you enjoy trying to follow them?
I don't enjoy it at all. Like,
it's a fun little game because you kind of try and track it. You lose your mind.
Every single day.
Yeah, the thing with floaters, you just have to ignore them and they disappear. They're weird that way.
Yeah.
Which, you get, the one floater I get is kind of a long line. I would say it almost looks like in Jurassic Park when they have the thing explaining the DNA.
Oh, talking to you?
Yeah, it almost looks like that.
Oh, by the way, that was just Clippy from Microsoft.
Yeah, that's what I'm describing, yes. Clippy, that was a classic.
But, that notwithstanding, I want to talk about a few things. Interesting thing that I wanted to get your opinion on. You know how, like, everybody has kind of said, like, for years, and it's weird how messaging works on this, people have said China's already won. There's no, it's inevitable they will beat us, right?
Beat us at what?
Just becoming the world superpower.
Okay.
And this is now the third country that was supposed to be the third of the world superpower
right.
in the U.S. And basically what ends up happening is the U.S. government is so ineffectual that it grinds to a halt. And then something happens where, like, Russia goes to war in fucking Afghanistan and they get ground down.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, and then it becomes all these other things where it's like, now you're starting to see, like, the zero COVID policy in China really just affected so horribly the faith in outside investment in China that the entire Chinese stock market and financial markets is in a greater slump than the rest of the world.
Right.
And it's like having a harder time recovering to the point where now they're just doing these like shows of force and like it's social engineering. Like Xi Jinping just did a massive mass wedding.
Okay.
Which, by the way, once you're having mass weddings into your society, you're now a cult.
Okay.
Like, I don't think you can say that you're a country.
What, a mass wedding that they just pair people and now they're married?
Pair people, but it's just like in order to reduce wedding costs, because in China, you basically, like, if you're a groom in China because girls are so in demand, you basically have to, you're doing dowries now.
Right. Is it one of those things where even in China, like, listen, we all look alike anyways, can't we just do this all at once?
I mean, they should just be fucking in a giant pile like that episode of South Park.
Yeah, they're just like, listen, none of us are special, we all look the same, we're all gonna show up to a factory, we get 2 days off, let's just do one wedding and get this over with.
100%.
You know, I wish we could bring that to our culture, that's kind of nice, get rid of the princess shit and just group weddings.
I mean, look, I'm all for it, but I think, again, you're now in a cult. Once there's a wedding with five couples getting married or more
right.
at the wedding, this is now a cult.
Do you think anyone ever just accidentally goes home with the wrong bride?
I think that must happen. I think just at the wedding. Remember there was those two baseball players that just swapped families in the 70s?
I never.
I think it was
that's
two players on the Yankees just swapped families and right. just stayed that way their entire life.
That's fun. That's almost fun to, like, the way you would trade at lunch. You're just at the wedding, and you're like, I'm a little bit more into your bride. Any chance you want to just do a clean swap here?
Yeah. That one.
On the China thing, so I one time back in college had a job at a ritzy hedge fund. Did not stick with the financial world. Probably got lucky there because I'm a spaz, and I would have ruined the books at a firm at some point. Like, I'm just not, I don't, it's not for me.
By the way, Rob,
yeah.
The head of ad sales at Gas Digital for 5 years.
There you go. Anyways, I remember there was an economist at the hedge fund that I worked at, and now this is already...
It was just one magazine in the waiting room.
Yeah, exactly.
It was 7 years old.
This was 20 years ago at this point. It's crazy to think about college being 20 years ago, or 15, whatever the fuck it is. I guess 15 years ago. And he was saying that, you know, during the Cold War, I guess he had written about this, I guess to some extent it was obvious. People thought that we were competing with Soviet Russia and that maybe their system was working, but really they just saw a giant economic boom as they moved all these people off their farms into factories. But as they ran out of the human capital, you could have forecasted basically it wasn't sustainable or real growth.
Well, which is what's happening in China. People are getting more money, so they're therefore having less kids.
Well, I guess he said that China was kind of on a similar trajectory, because socialism doesn't really work. So you have like those planned cities that no one lives in, where they built all these giant concrete buildings because they needed economic expansion. So they just built buildings that people never moved into.
Well, in China that's happening.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's hard to know how male investment plays out in the long run, particularly as cultures are more planned or more socialized.
Okay.
Now, China gets scary because sometimes you look at what's going on in our country and you think, did they plant? Was COVID purposeful? Even though, you know, maybe our intelligence community and Fauci was involved. But let's just imagine that fentanyl was purposeful. Okay. I'm just saying as a theoretical.
Well, that's what our government is starting to push, that China's intentionally sending fentanyl to Mexico to then come here.
Right. You got intentional fentanyl. You had derailing with COVID. You've got them pumping people over our border. And then you wonder if these tricky Asians are just very good at dismantling our society without ever going to war with us.
Well, because if they're just treating it like some sort of civilization video game.
Yeah, which is also dumb because, you know, we don't really compete as much as we've got capital, we buy their goods, they produce cheap goods and put their population into slavery to sell it to us, and they make their money and we get to live cheaper and pretend like we have less inflation. Everyone kind of wins. So, the idea that countries compete, it doesn't have to be that way. China certainly seems to play dirty with stealing of our intellectual capital.
Sure.
But anyways, I guess just to put a button on my long rant here, you never know if China's more likely or sooner headed to collapse than we are because of a more planned economy.
Because it could come at any given time.
Yeah.
Like, one thing can just be a misstep and then they cover up for two. Because here's the thing, there's also levels of people hiding stuff from the guys at the top.
Right.
China, at any given time, there's probably a million fuck-ups happening that nobody's reporting because they're like, all right, well, we're all dead for not catching this sooner.
Right. You know, they talked about that at the beginning of the Ukraine-Russia war, that part of the reason why it seems to me like Russia's been fighting exactly the way Russia wants to fight. And that they're being slow, methodical, and it's almost a siege to just let the Ukrainians die off, and then hopefully they end up with the peace agreement, and they take the territories that they've seized, and they move on, and I don't know, maybe there were physical assets in the areas that Putin took over, that it covers the war costs, either natural glass, lithium, which I'm not sure if there actually is lithium there, or those grain fields. But they had said that there was a possibility that the reason why the initial war efforts weren't working was because there was so much corruption in Russia. The generals had been lying to Putin about preparations and like what kind of supplies had even been purchased. And really, a lot of that money just was lining people's pockets the whole time. And so they weren't really good to go.
Well, I mean, the guy who what's the guy who led the rebellion where the tanks were driving at Moscow early on in the Ukrainian war?
Yergosian?
Yeah, who got killed on the plane.
Yeah, something like that.
Which, by the way, I made the point on this show, is like, who the fuck is flying private when you got that guy mad at you?
Yeah.
He's flying first class commercial. He's way less likely to fucking... And somebody pointed out to me that Putin has actually shot down commercial liners.
There you go. Well, Putin knows how to be a dictator.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. but that guy, if you look at his Wikipedia page, it goes, he got out of prison. Doesn't say why he was in prison under the Soviets. And, him and his mom just started selling hot dogs.
Yeah,
And then it's like something. It's like the Seinfeld episode. Yada, yada, yada. And now he's one of the most powerful generals in Russia.
Yeah, and he was a creepy general because I don't quite understand it. It's another one of these things where I read these articles and I start filling in the blanks, but I don't really know what the fuck I'm talking about. But Russia's got this interesting thing where they're down in Africa and basically they get the defense contracts for these mines or otherwise. So they're kind of, like they're old school, almost hiring knights when kings hire knights.
Okay.
They've got this...
they do that too. Blackwater's out in Africa too.
Right, so Prigozhin, though... The profits, or what? All right, let's say Putin was a mob. Prigozhin's the guy that runs the military contracting in Africa for all these mines. And so they get all this money coming back of running security for these mines, or basically being the military force for these dictators down in Africa. So he was in, I'm just saying, from like a mob type thing. I don't know the story of how he ended up being that guy, went from Putin's hot dog salesman to running the military contracting service down in Africa, but he was an earner.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, he was the guy collecting all the envelopes. He ran the Tangiers.
Yeah, yeah, he's running around. He's getting the envelopes, and then also the storyline of pulling all the people out of jail to go fight on the front lines, and that was his unit. I mean, that's some Middle Ages movie shit right there.
Well, isn't that like a typical thing that like whenever a dictator gets beef with the United States, they immediately let all their prisoners out? Like, I remember seeing the footage of Saddam Hussein just letting all these prisoners out.
Oh, loose in the wild?
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is a different play, because, and it works. You take the prisoners, and you go, hey, if you can survive this war, you're free. Now, you're on the front arms, you got to go fight, and if you turn around, your own commander just shoots you sight unseen. So, you know, in terms of soldiers, I guess those are good bodies to put on your front lines to die.
That's fair enough. But here's something I wanted to talk to you about in regards to Russia. So it's like, I don't know how much of the Tucker Carlson stuff you watched while he was in Russia. Did you watch a bunch of it?
You watched
the interview.
I watched the whole interview except for the first 45 minutes where Putin was giving that boring history lesson.
Yeah, I did a lot of fast forwarding there too. But what I didn't see was they like kind of showed on the Daily Show was like, Tucker filmed a bunch of other stuff in Russia.
Yeah, I watched the supermarket segment. That was fun.
So I saw the supermarket segment, but a lot of people don't realize that like the supermarket was a major piece of propaganda that helped America win hearts and minds of Russian people during the Cold War.
Oh, because we were like, we have food?
Obviously we were winning the War of Abundance. That's why like our farm system is more meant to be like, now we have too much stuff.
Right.
It was like kind of to show up Russia. But another big part of it was just like, so the supermarket was like invented by like, I think they credit like the Piggly Wiggly as the first supermarket.
The Piggly Wiggly?
Yeah.
Do they still have Piggly Wigglies?
Yeah, it's indeed. It operates.
How do we turn off the air? I feel like this might be creating more noise than we need. Let them really hear the sound of the engine.
Now I turn the music.
Yeah, you can throw the jams on in the background. I feel like that sets a nice vibe.
No, let's see. Come on, who's doing that?
Dude, that's a great concert we're listening to, Fish with Derek Trucks. All right, anyways, I cut you off.
But yeah, the supermarket. So basically, like, all these guys saw, like, oh, like, so basically supermarkets were kind of invented to make retail shopping cheaper for urban people as people moved into cities in the United States.
Okay.
So, like, you used to go to, like, a dry goods store and you just tell somebody to go get you what you needed, but now you can, like, look at this stuff. It ends up making you buy more, but it's individual goods were cheaper.
Okay.
So you buy more than you need, but then they showed this in Russia, like, as, like, relations got a little bit better, that was the thing that we were like, oh, this is what we send over there.
They have food.
And it, well, all these fucking women, like, I was just reading this thing recently about the Heinz vinegar. Nobody used to buy vinegar back in the day, right?
Okay.
And then, Heinz was, like, selling vinegar. And they were like, they just sent a salesman around to be like, here's why our vinegar is better. And then the women would go to stores and be like, I want this vinegar, not from the local farmer anymore. Fuck that guy.
Right.
So it's like, they just like put this supermarket in Moscow as like a symbol of American shit. And they just go, all the women who do the shopping during the day start going, I want that.
Right.
And that just influences their husband's decisions.
Right.
So that goes on for years. But it's like, so the Tucker being like, look at this supermarket. It's amazing. It's like, you've been so rich for so long, you just haven't been to an American supermarket in 25 years, you asshole.
Well, I gotta...
Like a coin-operated cart?
Yeah.
That existed in Brooklyn when I was a child.
So I'm gonna take the other side on this. All right, firstly, the coin-operated cart, yeah, that was... First, I thought his line was funny of to keep you from bringing it to your homeless encampment.
But here's the thing. Is I lived near a homeless encampment that was near a supermarket, and
right.
They were just stealing those carts anyway.
Right. I'm saying, that joke was funny. Yeah, the coin-operated cart, to me, that's not a sign of wealth. It's annoying. If anything, I think shopping places realized it's easier, whatever amount of carts we lose.
At least we'll get these coins back.
No, I think it's just, it's so, you get people not coming to your store because it's annoying. Oh, that's the one I have to bring a quarter to.
Oh, yeah.
So my guess is over time, we just kind of phased it out. I can't remember the last time I saw one of those quarter card things, or I bet if you do the math, you get more people that steal them because they feel like they paid the quarter for it, and so you feel less like a piece of shit. I don't know.
I think it's also more to get people to not just leave carts all over the fucking parking lot.
Right.
Let me get my quarterback.
Anyways, when I was watching Tucker fill that cart, in my head, I was like, yeah, that looks like about $400 worth of food. And then when they rang it up and it came out to American 120, my guess was exactly right. When they were like, we asked everyone, I was like, yeah, that seems like about $400. And it was $120.
Okay.
So that does leave you with some questions because it's not lower quality food. Now, it could be if you go out to the burbs, like, you might have found a particularly, like...
We were at an Aldi yesterday and everything was significantly cheaper than the supermarket.
I was about to say, it might be that he was at the equivalent of an Aldi, and an Aldi, if you put on camera, looks fine. Even so, that cart would probably come out to $200 here or so. The question becomes just, what is going on with American inflation, particularly with food, that if you're out in Russia, which was supposedly going to go hungry and not have enough resources amidst this war, they seem to be, at least in this category, if you go into a supermarket, it seems to be fully stocked, it seems to be clean, it seems to have high quality food, and your bill is coming out to $120.
Yeah, but the same thing goes for Mexico City.
I don't know that you'd see a supermarket that's that nice or with that pricing.
You will see certain areas of Mexico City, you'll certainly see a high quality.
I gotta tell you, I was only in Mexico once, and the bodegas that I was shopping in to get, like, just granola bars or otherwise, it was surprisingly not cheap. It was, like, from what I remember, I was only there 2 days and I was drinking, so maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, restaurant prices certainly are significantly cheaper for higher quality.
I can tell you, when I was in Israel, food, like, at the grocery store was more expensive than, in a grocery store in America.
But a lot of that also has to do with import tariffs and various things. Like, it's like, also the average salary is always going to meet the food prices.
Right, but let's just say, the two most important things to, if we started to stack them, most important things to people is, let's say, being able to show, knowing that you're safe. Let's say that that's number one. You don't want to live somewhere where you don't think you're safe. Number two, you want to be fed. And number three, you probably want to have some form of healthcare, right? So if you're trying to, I guess, evaluate one culture against another, or just showcase what's going wrong here, that in this other place you can show up into a store and buy more food for less money. It's a valid question. He's just posing the question of, hey guys, what's going on in our country that our cities are filthy dirty, and then in these other countries that we say are completely rotten, for some reason, they have clean cities and they have an abundance of cheaper food.
Yeah, it's almost like they're authoritarian, and like in Singapore, if you spit on the street, you go to jail. Like they have beautiful cities, it's clean, but if you spit on the street, you will be flogged.
It could be that in Russia they have centralized control over government, but typically speaking, price controls over food wouldn't lead to an abundance of more food. You wouldn't really have socialized policies that were creating better, more competitive, and cheaper supermarkets. Like, traditionally speaking, if a government were to step into the industry of food and try and create...
Yeah, over time, raise the price of food with the exception of, like, subsidies.
Or lower the quality or end up with rationing. So what's going on in the Russian economy that people that are earning less are able to show up to stores, not seemingly have the same inflation in food pricing, and being able to get carts of food for significantly less money?
But he was also in Moscow, which is like the capital, which is a nice place.
Yeah, like I said, it could have been all dirty tricks and smoke and mirrors. I said that on the, when we were talking about the segment on Part of the Problem, is that, you could go to certain areas of New York City and highlight how beautiful it is. I'm watching 1 5-minute video here of a subway station and a supermarket. That's not a very good representation. But I think what it highlights, I mean, look at what happened. I said this in Part of the Problem also. In San Francisco, Z's coming into San Francisco and they got all the homeless people out. They cleaned it. It seems to me like there's mismanagement in American cities that our leaders don't seem to care enough for us to be living in clean locations. Mismanagement.
I actually have a theory about that.
Okay.
Okay, so the people who it's politically unpopular with, who are the donor class in those cities, are these like wealthy kind of liberals who have this thing where they're like, oh, how could you do that to these poor people? But those are also the same people who can afford to take a Lyft everywhere, so they don't really have to deal with this.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, You don't care that there's crazy homeless people on the subway constantly if you can afford to live three blocks from your job in Manhattan.
Right.
And anytime you go anywhere else, you're taking an Uber anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I would beg to differ because amongst the donor class, if you look at, let's take San Francisco as the example, how much is your million-dollar property value coming down off the basis that you've got crime and, like, a guy who can live literally on your sidewalk?
Yes, that's just starting to happen in places like downtown San Francisco, where the places on the outskirts of San Francisco are now, the property values are a little more stable than in the city center.
Well,
that took 30 years.
You also have...
it took 30 years of bad policy.
Somebody walked away recently from a billion-dollar hotel in San Francisco because their loan valuations, the property value was basically underwater because of how much commercial real estate has come down in San Francisco.
And
you're going to see a lot of from what I understand, commercial real estate's quite a bubble, particularly in these cities, as so many workers aren't going into work, so there's just not the same demand.
Of course.
And also as the interest rate goes higher and people are trying to, they need new loans on their properties, but
because all commercial real estate development is predicated on the guys doing the development get paid on the refinance.
Right.
And they get their portion of that, and they give their investors a chunk of it, and they get their portion of it. It's all based on this, small incremental increases in property value over time.
My friend at Yo Kratom had a good line that basically the government's the business partner.
Well, this show brought to you by Yo Kratom, the homeless $60 keto. Go to YoKratom.com.
There you go. By the way, I've been taking the Reds every once in a while at night as I'm not drinking at home. And let me tell you, the best dreams. Like, dreams so good, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, I want to go back to that movie. That was a good movie.
Nice. Endorsement for YoKratom.com, the home of the $60 kid.
So, he was saying government's the business partner you don't want to have. And so if you're investing in a downtown area, you've got a shop, you've got a hotel, you've got rental properties, you know, government's in charge of the street. They're your business partner. And when they fail massively, they erode the value of your business. So I don't know that the donor class is unaffected by neglect by government in terms of cities. You know, they own the stores that they want people showing up to and spending money at. So I don't know that they're unscathed by, cities coming down in value as they bring in immigrants and non-taxpayers and have other problems.
I mean, yeah, that's fine, and it's a good question to pose. I just thought it very much didn't ring true, and the supermarket just kind of looked like an average supermarket, which is, I understand that the price situation is a different thing, but one other thing I wanted to talk about with Russia, there was a Christian Canadian family that has recently moved to Russia and immediately began to regret it.
That's amazing.
So the wife had, they actually, and this is another thing with the authoritarian thing, they had to take down an Instagram video where they were like...
Do they go over there like, no one speaks English here, this country sucks.
Part of it, yeah, they can't really get much done.
Yeah.
They sold their farm in Canada.
Right.
To move to Russia because it was too gay in Canada, which, I mean, I could have told you that. We were born in the gayest place ever.
That's a reasonable reason to move.
To Russia?
Yeah, just to go, it's too gay here. Let's go to Russia.
I mean, move somewhere a little less gay. But also, then I find out, I'm reading this, I'm going, oh, this guy's a beet farmer. I think he just thought he could make more money selling beets to a place where borscht is the national dish.
Oh, was this Dwight Schrute? Is this an episode of The Office?
Could be. It's the Canadian Office. It's a little different than the British Office.
I mean, also, talk about not having full data. World's biggest idiot moves to Russia and doesn't enjoy it. Okay.
Yeah. Just with his 10 kids, moves to Russia. And then he's like, yeah, my bank shut down my funds from Canada because of suspicious activity. Yeah, it's pretty suspicious when you move from Canada to Russia.
Yeah, when you take your 10 kids to move to Russia,
yeah.
Everyone's wondering what's going on here. This doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, this seems odd.
Hey, who knows? Maybe he'll become the emperor of Russia. Will be the turnaround story of the century. Where he's like the Willy Wonka of Russia or something. He's got the best beet recipes. So, let's not count it. Let's not count this one out yet.
All right, fair enough, Rob. Maybe he is doing this. But no, he did say he's like he's confident that he will develop it in what he can describe and considers a free country. Again, Russia, right. The place he moved to because they have strict laws prohibiting you being gay.
Right. Where in Russia did he? I don't know much Russia outside of Moscow.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he moved. I imagine he wanted to buy farmland in Russia to become a farmer. He's going to be more prosperous to be a farmer in Russia, was the actual reason.
I only know Russia and Siberia, which somehow, I don't know the story on this.
I'm aware of Korsk, Russia. I just know somebody who was born there.
My great-grandmother somehow, who I knew up until I was about age 12 or 13, which I think is rare to know a great-grandparent.
Sure.
But she somehow, I don't even know the story on this. She was like, I think living in like some fucking work penal colony in Siberia or some shit and somehow got here at age 11. I have no idea. Yeah, I should know that. I don't know how she got out of
Russia.
Yeah, I don't know how that lady got out of Russia, but she did.
All right. Yeah, I thought that was a funny thing in Russia. And also, we'll finish this up in a second. Like I said, this is going to be a short episode brought to you by YoKratom.
Hit me with some more obscure news topics. What else you got up in that brain?
Well, I was going to talk to you about Harrington and how you want to come back on the show just to belittle Harrington on the air.
I didn't say belittle. I like giving Harrington a hard time. As much as I love what I'm doing on Run Your Mouth now, and I think we got a great flow, I do... I miss some of the earlier versions. Me and Harrington probably did 50, 60 episodes together,
okay. And
they were a lot of fun. He was fun to bounce off of. The Yosef episodes were good, but when you were just talking about one of the bits you were doing with Harrington, I was like, I haven't done a podcast with Harrington. You know what I mean? It's like an old band. He was he laid down the bass. He was fun.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was saying this. I actually offended him recently. I said his best skill is imposing on people.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever had to do something with Harrington. I think he should be booking us in clubs around the country.
You're saying Harrington gets shit done. He's a good sales guy. He knows how to produce stuff.
Well, he doesn't know how to produce podcasts.
Okay.
But I will say he does know how to call people and make them think he's doing them a favor when in reality he's just getting the thing he wants.
He's Lewis's Padawan.
Dude, he is fantastic. You remember he used to bark for my show at
And he got people in.
Dude, it was the best. That show went from a terrible show to overnight being a fantastic show because Harrington would come and just fill the room with fucking roots.
I thought what he was doing when he was working on Comedy Fight Club was incredibly...
He did a great job for those guys. He did a good job. He almost had me. I swore I would never do a roast battle unless it was for a new club and it's the only way to get seen by the booker.
Right.
Like something I did Roast Masters for the New York Comedy Festival.
Right.
And he had me, he goes like, yeah, but like, think about this. And I go, I think he actually had me almost willing to do it. And I go, wait a second. Nobody's watching this fucking show. Go fuck yourself. And I just wouldn't do it. But like, he also was like, got me to the front of lines at Comic-Con. All this stuff. He's fantastic at just that sort of thing. Just
right.
Like, imposing on people and just getting it done. Also, I know he's not going to check this. So he's
right.
Gonna hear these compliments.
That's funny. It's a different kind of producer. That's a segment producer. That's like, could have made a fortune on Howard Stern type like shows with budget. That's a Hollywood job. You know how much goes into the guys who are able, good at getting locations, good at getting
make a ton of money.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a valuable skill. Harrington, get us on the road. Start putting shit together.
Let's go. You're my road agent. I said it 2 weeks ago on the show, and now I'm saying it now. Do you want to know another weird, obscure news story?
Yeah.
Thing. Did you hear about this, Willie? I'm going to do more about this on High Society this week, but did you hear about this Willy Wonka exhibit in like Scandinavia? It was like considered the saddest thing of all time.
Okay.
So for the new movie, they did this whole thing where it was like they tried to make a Charlie and but it was
yes.
Like the most depressing.
I joked on Twitter, it was the LOL of birthday parties.
That's hilarious. So yeah, but it was just like, yeah, I thought that was a good obscure little news story where it's just like you're trying to create a fun thing. And it's like, it just goes to show you that these things that are, these tourist attractions that are built as Instagrammable things.
Right.
Are just, this is a brief fad that is never going to work. Like, do you know, remember the Museum of Happiness? That was the thing that happened.
No.
It was just these things where you could take hilarious good photos for like, and boomerangs for your Instagram.
Okay.
And then people actually took photos outside of the exhibits and the walk around and they were like, oh, this is crappily built.
Right.
And it's just creating a veneer of happiness.
Right. Well, I guess the takeaway from the Wonka one was that actually sounds like a fun and good birthday party, but the balls on those people that they just put a couple of decorations up on the wall, gave kids the equivalent of like a crackle, you know, at the end of a thing. So yeah, they were scamming. What country was that in though?
I think Denmark.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I think all those countries are basically sad countries.
Why? All the women in the Netherlands are so good looking.
Yeah, but that's, I think, the thing is, like, they're all good looking, so they kind of stop trying.
Oh.
And they all know they're hot, so they're all kind of bitchy.
Interesting.
I think they starfish a lot out there.
A lot of starfishing out in,
I think so, yeah. I think that's how it goes. But actually, here's the thing, and then we'll fucking wrap this up.
That a lot of starfishing in the Netherlands.
Yeah, I think so.
They should put the word out there. Let people know. Have a warning.
Oh, a starfish warning?
Yeah, starfish warning.
Our chicks are hot, but yours are too expensive, and they don't fuck well. But this is actually what we started talking about this, but we got sidetracked in the beginning. I kind of noticed this, and I've been thinking about it a lot. So all these guys I grew up with, and I, you know, this is kind of how I stayed friends with Dave, is like we kind of like got to this thing where we're like all.
Do you need a beer or anything? I feel like we haven't passed any gas stations. I'm good personally.
No, we have beers in the trunk. I'll be fine.
Okay.
But it's this thing where it's.
I gotta turn this back on. Sorry,
yeah,
audience.
It's very fucking hot in this car right now. But I kind of noticed this thing where we all said all politicians are criminals, that's this thing that we all stuck to. But then, like, Donald Trump and George Santos made everybody be like, these people are disgraces. I was like, I thought we were all on board that all of these people were disgraces.
Yeah, well, that's, firstly, I never got a joke out of this, and then I saw Eddie Pepitone basically with the exact same joke, and it was brilliant and unbelievably funny. But I had given people a hard time that the reason why you don't like Donald Trump, you're basically complaining that he's a less dignified rapist. Because if you look at the Oval Office, what the president does, the wars that they fight, the way that they don't represent us and steal our money, and you just go, well, the dignity, the dignified.
Marilyn Manson's brain.
There you go. But you're just complaining, I just want a rapist with better etiquette. And my feeling is, well, who cares? It's a rapist. Well, either way.
That's the thing is, like, all these people, and it's like, it's kind of why they got them all to co-sign these wars.
Right.
It's like, they broke this thing for them, and then they go, actually, no, we just kind of want to, we want to be re-blue-pilled. We were only pretending to be red-pilled for the last 50 years.
I look at it, it's very similar to Martin Shkreli. I don't think Martin Shkreli was doing anything different than the industry in any way. The problem was he was very okay with being a villain. And that is unacceptable to the other salespeople in that role who are like, hey, we're not trying to be that noisy about this. We got a grift here going.
It's kind of like how Carlo Gambino died in his bed and John Gotti died in jail because he had to be the Teflon Don.
You know, I don't know enough about the mob, but I'm sure that's a perfect, I'm sure it's a perfect example.
Yeah.
But Martin Shkreli, he's jacking up the prices.
Well, their head
who's
listening to this, think about it this way. Carlo Gambino was significantly more successful mob boss than John Gotti.
Okay.
You know what John Gotti looks like.
Right.
Do you know what Carlo Gambino looks like?
No.
Yeah, there you go.
So Shkreli,
I don't know what the CEO of Johnson & Johnson looks like, but I know what Martin Shkreli looks like.
They had to get rid of him because he was being loud and kind of calling into focus that the jacking up of prices is evil.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we got to get rid of this guy. You know, he's blowing up our spot. He's making a lot of noise. I think politicians are the same way, where you get someone who's not as good as selling the illusion of we're better, we're more dignified, we represent you. You get someone who's an obvious grifter and the whole machine's like, we can't have that here. It's blowing up our spot.
Yeah.
Which on the same reason why I don't think they'll ever really bust Biden for corruption, because they all have some sort of a grift of how they're getting paid when they leave. Either it's the book deals,
a
cable channel, it's a Netflix thing, it's the speaking fees.
Yeah.
They're all in the game of corruption, so they don't really want to be going, they don't want to be eating each other over that because they don't want to call it into focus. Nancy Pelosi didn't want new laws about how she couldn't trade stocks.
Well, the Stock Act exists because of Nancy Pelosi.
Right, and that's probably why she left. She's like, all right, if I can't insider trade, what's the point of being here?
Well, the Stock Act has existed since since the Obama administration. Because of Nancy Pelosi, she held up on the floor the bill that Obama passed on credit card reform.
Right.
So that her husband could dump massive amounts of credit card stocks.
Could get out of all of it. Yeah,
get out of all of his positions.
That's great. So I think part of the outrage, particularly against Santos and a little bit about Trump. Well, the Trump one, I think you're right. It's people, they want to go back to being blue-pilled. And so Trump just calls into focus. They want someone who will lie to them
and pretend like we're being dignified. They say that they are anti-corruption, but then once something happens that like really brings into focus how corrupt things are, they go, oh, no, I actually don't want the smoke.
Right. Well, that's part of the sale of government is going, listen, we got this. You don't have to worry about morality. You don't have to worry about it. We're going to take care of the border. Like, you know what it is? It's the mob that they're willing to do evil shit, and then you don't have to think about it. They're going, we're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
And they go,
keeping the blacks out of the neighborhood.
Yeah, and they go, listen, we took care of it. No. They loved what we did for them. We got them a new spot. You know what I mean? Because everyone wants to feel like we live in a rosier world than we do. And so part of the sale of government is stepping in and letting people just feel good about the evils that exist in the world.
And that will always exist.
That will always exist in the world because government's stepping in to fix it, and that's the role of government, and they're taking care of it.
Well, that's also a thing that happens. That's also a thing that happens now with every war. You notice that they go, well, actually, we're just mad at the government of this country, not the people of the country. And that's been happening since Afghanistan.
Right.
And now it's the same kind of thing that's going on with Hamas in Gaza.
Right.
We're getting rid of these people, and it's like there never was this focus back, like, you know, 100 years ago. It was like, no, we hate them. We hated Germans.
Right.
Like we didn't hate the Nazi Party. We hated Germans. We didn't hate Hitler for making Germans do stuff. We were like, fuck these guys. They're complicit. Like, and now it's like, oh, like we've just absolved the humanity of, and it's like, and it's just like the news just continues to repeat things, and then like you start to believe it.
Right. Me and Dave were talking about this not on air, but we're about peace in the Middle East. But one of the points that came up was, you know, for all the people that think that they can't resolve it, and that the Muslims will forever hate the Israelis and they will never let it go, I'm not going over to Europe to go kill Germans. I've never thought about that. I've never thought that I need to be vengeful for it towards them. I don't care.
Yeah.
Live in a different world now where you're not trying to kill me. So I'm not looking up who was involved 100 years ago in killing their grandkids. I don't care.
Under Trump, trade was starting to be normalized with Israel in the Arab world.
Right. So I'm just saying the idea that they can't... the idea that the Muslims will endlessly hate the Jews, that nothing can be done other than eradicating them, is just a poor excuse for the what I see as being the crimes against humanity being perpetrated upon Gaza right now.
All right, we'll leave it at that.
I don't know. That's a heavy end. Where's it? You got one more? We got 7 more minutes in this ride. You got one more loony story?
Some silly. Let me think. This is a weird or silly, but it's something that's up your alley. So there was an article that came out recently. I was reading in The Economist that black people are doing better proportionately economy-wise because of the tight labor market than ever.
Because it's easier to steal from whites now?
I don't think that is the tight labor market, no. I think that's why. It is easier now. But what I was saying is... they're doing better because they're more involved in the labor market because there's more need for employees. The labor market's growing. And it's literally just market forces. After a constriction of market forces during COVID,
right. The
release of it is actually helping more people get into the workplace that are people of color than any amount of affirmative action, DEI, any of that stuff.
So you're saying we need more COVIDs?
I'm not saying we need more COVIDs. I'm saying we need less COVIDs. Because this is actually happening. Just the marketplace is actually getting these guys to work. And that might change once things like free up again and the economy is booming again. But right now you're getting more participation from poor black people in the labor market than you have in history.
Or when you legalize all this migrant workers and then all of a sudden
now you have a lot of brown workers, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, they'll sort that one out.
I think that'll happen. I think the real thing is just like get them to do the way immigrants have always worked.
The blacks prefer welfare anyways.
I don't think that's true. I think what happens is you get on welfare and you're scared to lose it because it's the thing. It's like when you're scared to switch jobs because it's the enemy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean? Like, so it's like, you need to have a good offer before you leave a job to go somewhere else. Like, nobody ever makes a lateral move.
It's also, once if you have that stuff coming in, you've got a small layer of protection. And sometimes it's very unclear. You almost got to, like, sit down and want to price out the benefits that you have. And then you, like, for example, well, I remember,
like, if I take this job and lose my welfare benefits, right, I'm not good at the job and I get fired.
Yeah, or I once had, one year of my life, I was poor enough to have Connecticut Medicaid.
Okay.
And just getting insurance is a pain in the ass. And then you got to start figuring out, all right, well, how many hours do I have to work at a full-time job that's worth me giving up this benefit? And you don't really want people thinking that way. And then if you start totaling, well, all right, well, I got this coming in on every kid. I got the food stamps coming in. I got the health care covered. It almost becomes scary to get a job because if the job's not, doesn't have some sort of a guarantee and you give up all your benefits, you can find yourself with a worse problem.
Oh, yeah, of course, 100%. Like, now you're fucked. Now you got to do all that paperwork
again. Right.
And it takes 8 to 10 months.
Yeah, and who wants to do paperwork?
Nobody.
That's like another job.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you do all the paperwork to get on all those benefits, you want to get paid on the paperwork you did, so.
Oh, and it is. It does become because of all the different, because they don't just give people money in this country, it's 15 different social programs, it becomes a part-time job to keep your benefits.
Isn't it amazing how you could spend 2 hours in the middle of the country going to a new area and then show up to the exact same strip mall?
Dude, it's everything is in this country is fucking mall. It's fucking, mall is a cancer.
This is like, you could have fallen asleep at the Kansas City Hotel and woken up right now and gone.
Like, are we still in the, yeah. I would have thought that I nodded off for 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's like waking up on the runway. You're like, yeah. Are we still on the runway? I was asleep for 3 hours.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the end of the show. This is Notes from the Road.
Yeah, hopefully the sound worked out.
I hope so. I mean, nobody may ever hear this, but whatever. We force ourselves to have a conversation. All right, go follow Rob at Robbie the Fire on all social media. Go check him out on at the Run Your Mouth podcast. And, of course, Part of the Problem with Dave Smith. Yeah, check me out, Chris from BKOYN on Twitter and Instagram. Good night.
Well, show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die. Oh, moon of all above, now must say die. I tell you